In today's episode,
the earlier that the farmer can get out and onto the field with nitrogen, i.e. February or early March, then I'm probably looking at a three split scenario. But if that time marches on, then I'll probably put more nitrogen on in the first application and cut back to two splits.
The most important thing is to make sure that there is a demand from the crop. So you want to apply the nitrogen when the crop is actively growing. So the roots have got to be there to be able to take the nitrogen up.
Welcome to CropGarth. I am Tiffany Stevenson, and today we're joined by Professor Ian Bingham from SRUC and Peter Lindsay from SAC Consulting. I'm very excited to be talking to them today. Ian, would you like to begin by introducing yourself?
Yes, I'm Ian Bingham. I'm a crop physiologist at SRUC. So I've been with the organisation, getting on for probably 37 years now. So my main roles are in teaching and in research. So I've had an interest over the years in root-soil interactions, and then more recently in sort of disease-yield relationships. And the teaching I do covers sort of crop physiology, general crop science, and even extends. In the past, I've even done a bit of food science as well. You have to turn your hand to all sorts of things when you're teaching.
So definitely a wealth of knowledge. 37 years.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I think I know. I'm more conscious of what I don't know. When you teach and when you research as well, you kind of discover you know less than you think you know. So, but that's not a bad thing.
Well, I'm sure you'll know plenty for today. Peter, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yep, I'm Peter Lindsay. I'm a mere boy in this organisation. I've only been here for 23 years in comparison to Ian. Agricultural consultant, working between the Perth and Forfar offices, and I specialise mainly in agronomy work, so I spend most of my time walking crops throughout farms in Angus and Perthshire.
Excellent. So it has been a very wet winter. The ground has been waterlogged in many areas, and I know there's many farmers who are phoning me at the moment complaining they can't get the plough in. So what are you seeing out in the field with the crops at the moment, Peter?
We've been right in the eye of the storms this winter. We've had a lot of rain since October in Angus in particular. But going around crops at the minute, they're actually greener than I would have expected coming out of the winter. They're not yellowing and hungering for nitrogen as much as I might have expected through this. And locally, we are beginning to dry up, so ploughs have been moving in the last few weeks. It was wet again at the weekend, but on the lighter land, they'll be going again today with the ploughs. So there is a bit of progress being made. And then with the NVZ close period passing by at the end of this week, there'll be a look to try and get some nitrogen onto some winter crops, if conditions allow.
Well, that's exactly what we're wanting to talk about today, is putting nitrogen on and other fertilisers on as well, and when people are wanting to do it or should be doing it to get the most out of it. So shall we just start with the winter wheat? What are the timings for applying the fertiliser to the winter wheat?
So certainly in this area, my plans would be to get on with compound fertilisers, which many of which have not been applied this back end because it has been so wet. So I would be expecting, as whenever conditions allow, to be able to get out with the compound fertiliser. And when they were ordering, many people realised that the chances were they weren't going to get on until the springtime anyway. So they opted to choose to order something like an 8-24-24 or an 8-20-30. So when they put that compound fertilizer on, there will be a small amount of nitrogen on just to encourage some of these more backward crops to spring into life without risking too much nitrogen being applied, with the risk of washing away, we're only in February, so we may well still get a chunk of winter happening yet. And then it's depending on how tender some of these crops are, it could be a little and often approach this year to try and gradually get it into a crop that can take up considerable amounts of nitrogen. But there's plenty of more crops that are at typical growth stages, and they'll more likely just get a kind of a 50-50 or a third split of nitrogen as the season goes on.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Peter. I think we did some work with a part of a student challenge looking at the effects of timing of nitrogen, and we deliberately had low seed rates in there. So we had a sort of 400 as a standard seed rate, perhaps, or maybe slightly high, and down to 200 to simulate a backward crop, because we were just wanting to demonstrate what the effects of an early nitrogen an early split in the application would be. And we were able to in those sort of trials, the low seed rate was yielding maybe half a ton to a ton and a half lower than the high seed rate. But when we put, and that was under a sort of a standard one-third, two-third split. But when we reversed that and we did a two-thirds, one-third split to the low seed rate, we're able to lift the yield back up to what you'd expect from the standard seed rate. So there was definitely effect there. But I think that kind of boost to tillering, it does depend on the conditions, because we tried the same thing the following year and we didn't see such an effect. And it might be because the soil's dry, it's not taking it up as quickly. But there's certainly got some mileage there, I think, to play with the timings if you are dealing with these backward crops.
Peter, do you usually advise to have three loads of fertilizer being applied, or would you just do it a split into two?
I start off planning for three, and as time slips past, whether it's the weather or just other things getting in the way of it not being applied to the field, I can then revert to two. So the earlier that the farmer can get out and onto the field with nitrogen, i.e. February or early March, then I'm probably looking at a three split scenario. But if that time marches on, then I'll probably put more nitrogen on in the first application and cut back to two splits. But yeah, horses for courses.
So it's being adaptable to what the season actually brings. It's all very well talking about it in February, but we don't know what's going to come next week.
Exactly, but I've seen it before, that putting some nitrogen on and then you get a dump of snow. But coming out the other end of the snow, it's usually the crop that's had the nitrogen that's in the better scenario, because the ground conditions can often be wet for quite some time once the snow melts. And by the time you wait after the snow has gone and for the ground conditions to dry up enough to get on, if it's not had any nitrogen, it can be pretty hungry looking by the time you're able to get on the field, in which case you may have dropped some tillers and lost some potential yield. So I do tend to like to get something on quite early.
So is your advice pretty similar for the winter barley?
It's even more so for the winter barley, to get on early. So it tends to be the first crop that looks yellow and is actually looking for nitrogen. And there's many a year where the NVZ close period, we're pretty much waiting for it to get past so that we can get out for nitrogen, because the crops are yellow by this time of year. But as I said earlier, they don't seem to be as hungry this year as what I have seen in previous years.
That's interesting. Yeah. I wonder whether that's because, I mean, is it because the growth has been slower?
Yeah, that's what I've not got to the bottom of that yet either, whether it's the recent warmish weather, whether we're getting a bit of mineralization of some N out of the ground to keep it going. It's certainly not due to lack of rainfall going through the soil in this area. So, yeah, my gut feel is that it probably is. We've had some relatively mild weather since the turn of the year, and whether it's just been able to give out enough mineralization of N to keep the crops going, or whether they're just not using too much yet. But there is little white growths at the ends of the roots that the crops are just beginning to move forward now.
You certainly expect with the heavy rain to have lost some over winter, some leaching, wouldn't you?
Yeah, no, definitely. No, I don't think we'll have much residual nitrogen lying around in the ground after this winter. We locally we've seen like in excess of 700 mils of rain since October, between October and Christmas. So that's often the annual rainfall.
It's definitely been very wet. So what about for oilseed rape, Peter? What are you thinking there?
So oilseed rape, so that tends to be the first crop that I would look to get on. Kind of end of this week, early next week, if ground conditions allow, it'll be a case of getting out and getting some nitrogen and sulfur on those crops. And they tend to also be the first crops to be able to travel, because a good proportion of winter oilseed rape crops now are established using direct drill or minimum tillage techniques, so they're not ploughed. And that tends to hold the tractor up on top of the ground relatively easier in comparison to land that's been ploughed and drilled. But I think from what many farmers are saying is certainly whilst the fields look okay, there is still some soft spots that can catch them out when they drive around. But oilseed rape will be the first crop that we go out on and put nitrogen on.
Good. So Ian, am I right in thinking you've done some work looking at nitrogen use efficiency?
Yes, over the years in various forms, yes.
So what sort of things should you be thinking about when you're applying fertilizer to make sure you're maximizing the nitrogen use efficiency?
Well, it comes back to what Peter's been saying, really. The most important thing is to make sure that there is a demand from the crop. So you want to apply the nitrogen when the crop is actively growing. So the roots have got to be there to be able to take the nitrogen up. And that's why we talk about splitting the nitrogen so that we give sufficient when the growth first starts. And then as that growth then develops and the demand increases, then we apply more. So that's probably the most important effect. We've been looking at varietal differences. There are variety differences that's not really translated into, you know, developing varieties specifically for efficient nitrogen use yet, but that might come in the future. But there is certainly variation there in nitrogen use efficiency. And we've also looked at we've done some work looking at foliar N as well, you know, to test the claims that you sometimes see in the popular press that foliar N is more efficient than soil applied N, but we didn't find anything to support that claim. So the uptake efficiency was pretty much the same as applying it as ammonium nitrate.
That's definitely an interesting point, because there's a lot more people asking now about foliar N. So it's interesting to see that you've not found a difference, because I know some companies are claiming there is a difference.
Yes. I mean, I think we went back to basic principles to look at that, because some of the claims are that it can be 4 to 5 times more efficient, but when you actually try and do the calculations, you know, that just doesn't marry up, really. So I think it's down to the way they're tested. So when we tested it, we ran these experiments with a full nitrogen response curve as our sort of benchmark. And then we were looking to see what the effect of the additional nitrogen was made as a foliar N. And you certainly get nitrogen into the crop, but it was only getting in with the same kind of efficiency as the ammonium nitrate the additional ammonium nitrate we applied in the soil. And that makes physiological sense to me as well, to be honest. So I would have been surprised if we had seen these big benefits.
Fair enough. What about, is there a difference between liquid and granular fertilizer?
We haven't actually tested that ourselves, but I think the benefit of the liquid fertilizer is that you know, it spread more uniformly, so that could lead to an improvement. If the soil conditions are dry, then it's more likely to get into the soil rather than just sitting on the surface. But I think it just depends very much on the conditions and you know how well you're able to spread it. If it gets, essentially it needs to be in the soil for the roots to be able to take it up, and there needs to be moisture there. So if you've got dry soils, then you're going to have to wait for the prills to dissolve in and get into the soil for the crop to take it up. And that's potentially, I guess, where a benefit from the liquid end would come in. I don't know, Peter, whether you've got anything to add from that from a practical side.
Yeah, I would agree. The liquid is the uniformity, particularly at the edge effect, where you don't have a declining slope of application that a solid fertilizer spreader might have, albeit technology's coming on a long way with section control in application of solid fertilizer, so that the yield benefit is possibly diminishing. But also the conditions that you can apply the liquid fertilizer, you tend to be able to do it in windier conditions than you would be able to with solid fertilizers, which especially out to some of the wider 36 meters plus tram lines that we're working on now, it could be more accurate to apply it in liquid format. The only caveat to the liquid is that I've seen scorches for frosts if you've been doing it in frosty weather, whereas solids doesn't have a problem with that. And likewise, at the later timings when there's hot weather, I've seen flag leaves tipped off, scorched off by applying liquid at that time as well. So there's pros and cons of both, but as long as the grower is well aware of these risks, then liquid is a very popular option nowadays.
So we've mentioned applying NP and K, but what about sulfur? What would you look to do, Peter?
So certainly with the liquid fertilisers, a lot of them have got sulfur in them. So we just tend to be putting on sulfur with every nitrogen application. And that is probably the more common approach nowadays. We used to maybe look to put the nitrogen and sulfur fertilizer on early in the early application and then follow up with the straight nitrogens when we were doing it with solids. But I think if we're on the liquids, then that tends to be that we manage to give a sulfur application every time we're given a nitrogen application.
Again, not something I've worked with. Well, no, we did some trials on spring barley and we didn't really find much of a sulfur response. So I think in a lot of fields, it's difficult to judge the risk of sulfur deficiency, isn't it? But I think, you know, I would expect maybe with the heavy rainfall and the leaching, some crops may be more sulfur responsive this year. But yeah, I mean, all our trials now, all the trials I do, I would routinely put some sulfur on because we are getting into that area where they may be coming in, you know, becoming a bit riskier, even though we don't always see a response to that in the trial data. It's an insurance.
Yeah, we would often see visual symptoms of sulfur deficiencies in cereal crops if it's not been applied. So certainly I've gone probably to using more sulfur now than we did many years ago, but I think that's the effects of cars cleaning up their emissions that's requiring us to actually have to buy the sulfur and put it on the fuels instead of relying on pollution.
Are you finding that more on the lighter land then, on the coarse textured soils, would you say?
Yeah, I would say it's more in the lighter land, and sulfur is very leachable as well, so there'll not be very much left. And I think also from the reduced use of livestock manures and things like that, often the sulfur would have been applied with any of the kind of manure products that's there. So as that reduces in quantities around the country, then that's maybe also showing up more of these deficiencies in sulfur.
Yeah.
Ian, you mentioned before about spring barley. What would you suggest for applying fertiliser to spring barley? I know we've not even planted it yet, but as we're talking about fertiliser, I might as well ask.
Well, I think the important thing with from the trial work that we did was getting some nitrogen into the crop, you know, early. So the problem we often get in the spring is we've been having quite dry springs. So we found a response to getting something in the seed bed. If it was delayed and all put on at sort of you know, the three leaf stage, then you know, in dry conditions you can see a yield effect from that. So getting something down the spout early on just helps mitigate that risk. So other than that, I think we have tried a sort of how do you phrase it, a little and often approach, but that didn't really yield any great benefits over just the standard sort of, you know, some in the seedbed and then the rest shortly afterwards. So there's no great benefit in terms of little and often, but I think the main one was actually getting some in the seedbed just to help it when the soil is dry.
It's definitely difficult to imagine just now the soil being dry, but it's amazing how quickly it's probably going to turn. Peter, what do you usually advise farmers to do?
Yeah, so again, if possible, get the compound down the spout. I think it's the N and the P is the two that gives the real benefit of being close to the seed when it gets germinated. And if you haven't got the ability to put it down the spout, then get it on as soon as you can on the top. And likewise, I agree with Ian, I've probably moved forward to getting the nitrogen, the whole lot on earlier than what I used to do. And with it used to be traditionally you waited to see the tram lines before you put it on, but that was mainly so that you could see where you were going. But now with GPS, you can basically get on before it's emerged and get that job done while the conditions are still favourable, because it'll either turn very dry or very wet after drilling. So I think getting it on early is the main thing.
So Ian, you've also done some work looking at protected urea versus ammonium nitrate. What have you found in those trials?
Well, unfortunately, we're kind of just gathering the data up at the moment, so it's a bit early to say. We did find, we did some trials on, we had winter wheat at one site down in Edinburgh, and we had spring barley at two sites, one in Edinburgh and one in Aberdeen. And in two of those trials, we actually found the ammonium nitrate was the highest yielding set of plots. So we compared it with straight urea, and we compared it with protected ureas. Protected ureas did okay, but they were certainly no better than the ammonium nitrate. And the lowest yielding one, apart from the control that didn't get any fertilizer, was the straight urea. The spring barley in Edinburgh didn't really show much in the way of the yield differences. What we need to do at the moment now is actually measure the nitrogen content in the crop. We're getting those data in, and then we can do the calculations on the nitrogen use efficiency, because it's also going to come down to the relative costs, cost per unit of N, as to which is going to be beneficial or not. And I think that's going to depend on market prices.
Is this trial going to continue on for another few years?
Yes, we've got another year to do. So I'm hoping to get those data out so you know, our consultants can see before people go ahead with the spring applications. But we always have to be cautious when we've only done one season's trials. For a positive message, we really need to think, or a robust message, we need to be looking at least 2 years.
So it'd be interesting in another year's time, actually hearing what your conclusions are after the 2 years of trials.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I'm hoping we'll see something interesting, but we'll be demonstrating the plots at some of the open evenings this coming summer, so we can talk more about it then. And we'll have had the tissue nitrogen data back as well, so we'll have been able to do the calculations on the end use efficiencies.
Peter, have you found there to be a preference for urea or ammonium nitrate?
I think there was more of a move towards urea last year, mainly due to availability of products. So many people used urea for the first time last year. And I think traditionally my kind of theory would be that you need about 10% more N put down in the form of urea than you would if you were using an ammonium nitrate to get the same yield. I don't know if that has come out in the trials that you've done, Ian, or whether that's still to be worked upon.
No, we still need to work on that, but that figure fits with research that's done elsewhere. So I think you might lose something like 20% through volatilization, but that is very dependent on soil conditions. So it depends on soil pH and depends on the climate at the time. Because you really need rain to wash it into the soil to protect it from the volatilization. So you could lose up to, 10%, I think, would be a sensible figure. But it could go up to 20% and under the wrong kind of conditions.
Yeah, and I think last year the concern was, obviously, we're trying to grow low nitrogen malting barley, generally in the spring barley scenario. So again, I was pushing them to get the urea put on as early as possible because I didn't want to run the risk of nitrogen still becoming available to the crop later on, which might end up going to the head and giving high nitrogen barley. So didn't appear to have too many issues with high nitrogen last year.
Well, that's interesting because our data from the trials will give us an indication as to whether protected urea is, with a sort of slightly slower release, will have had an effect on the grain nitrogens as well. But so we need to get the data in to be able to see that.
Definitely something that I think we should pick back up on in the future to find out what you found there. Ian, what would be your top tips for farmers this year?
Well, from a nitrogen point of view, I think it's just making sure that you get the nitrogen on when the crop demand is greatest. That will give you the best nitrogen use efficiency. So depends on your market, of course. We've already talked about grain protein. So the timing will depend on the market. And then you do have a choice of products, but that will come down to costs and soil conditions as to which is going to give you the best effect.
Peter, what are your top tips?
I mainly agree with Ian. So I think I would be keen to get on with a little dose of nitrogen quite early this year because there won't be much residual nitrogen left in the soils after the heavy rainfall. And then just keep going with the kind of little and often approach throughout the season. The product choice, I think people are maybe less scared of trying ureas and other products, so buying based on price is quite acceptable, and I think there is quite a variation in prices between products. But just knowing what product you're using will determine as to when you apply these products.
Thank you both. There's been a lot of interesting points raised today. Thanks, Peter and Ian. It has been great hearing what your thoughts are on fertilisers and hearing about some of the research that has been done as well. Definitely giving farmers something to think about when they're going out putting their fertiliser on after such a wet winter. Next up, we have an update from out in the field.
Hi, my name is Mark Basher-Gibbs, and I'm a consultant with SAC Consulting. As we are all very well aware, we're coming into a very much later period than usual for getting spring crops into the ground. And for the majority of growers, it will be into April before ground conditions allow for any kind of field work and seedbed preparation. Spring beans would ideally have been sown in March, and there may be a few that have managed to get beans in the ground. And for crops like spring barley, spring wheat and oats, most crops will be sown through April, with the last to go in possibly as late as early May. In a late season like this, final yields will be influenced to a greater degree by the extent to which plants can tiller before moving into their reproductive growth stages. Soil moisture and good seed-to-soil contact is required for good germination. However, where soil is very wet, such as a season like this, oxygen becomes a limiting factor which can reduce germination. One way we can help mitigate the downsides of late sowing this year is to pay particular attention to seed rates, so we optimise the number of ears per metre squared come harvest. Of course, we know spring barley has a better capacity for tillering, while spring oats and spring wheats less so. When calculating seed rates through April, aim to establish 350 plants per metre squared for spring barley, 360 plants per metre squared for spring oats, and 380 plants per metre squared for spring wheat. Your final seed rate calculation should account for the seed's 1,000 grain weight, the germination percentage, and your expectations for establishment rate. As a general rule of thumb, increase seed rates by 50 seeds per metre squared from your original calculation for each week that sowing is delayed beyond the first week of April. This will help achieve target fertile tiller numbers through to harvest.
Thank you for joining us today, and thank you to our excellent speakers. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and follow our podcast. If you want to know more about fertilisers, have a look at the technical notes, which are in the show notes. They cover all aspects of fertilisers and what application rates you should be applying, depending on things like your previous crops and your soil analysis results. So make sure you check those out.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.